Hey Pod, we're back.
Yes, welcome back to another episode of His Story Time. Hopefully you're doing okay. I mean, Catherine and I are
doing.
We're thriving.
Yeah. It's been a couple of days since our last pod.
I'm still shaking with livid fervor. Oh my god.
That was
shakes coffee.
Yeah, we've been very busy this past week. These past like 2 weeks, honestly.
Literally,
it's been
crazy.
Like life has just
really just gone off.
Wow. Crazy.
Damn, she really went off on that one.
Yep. And so I'm just gonna give you a recap of what's up with me. Blake's gonna give you a recap of what's up with him, and we're gonna dive into our first Pride Month episode, which we're very excited about.
Yes. Disclaimer. With everything going on, we're still gonna talk about everything going on.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because that's who we are as people. And hopefully you're here for it. I mean, yeah. We think human rights are a universal discussion. And I'm just going to say this too. There's a quote from Mary Poppins. And it's been my bloodline as I like deal with ignorance in America. It's there's no one so hard to teach as the child who knows everything. So admit that admit that you don't know everything. And just honestly take in multiple viewpoints. I've enjoyed watching Ben Shapiro's hot takes on this.
Me too.
Like honestly, like,
or any conservative media, like, connoisseur,
yeah.
Like Steven Crowder, him yelling about black-on-black crime and then using bad statistics.
I, like,
it just gives me a laugh.
No, and I like, just, because it's hit a point where, like, you'll listen to, like, Ben Shapiro, or you'll listen to someone, or you'll listen to motherfucking Caitlyn Bennett.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Okay,
I'm gay, bitch.
Something I appreciate about, like, the Steven Crowders and Ben Shapiros of the world is at least they try and use facts, even though they're, like, bad, like, misrepresented data. But, like, Caitlyn Bennett just does not give a fuck. Frick about
the fun thing about her is she's, like, in my mind, she's the reason we have Pride Month. She's the reason we have to... No, hear me out on this. She's the reason we have to devote the month of Stonewall to our existence. She's the reason we have to...
And
continue.
I hope she lives with that.
She's the reason we have to continue to just embrace who we are as people, because people like her just can't accept us as we are.
Wow.
Because you think human rights should be, like, a universal
and
thing?
And you would think as a raging constitutionalist, she would, like,
fucking
be
real.
A little bit more libertarian.
I wish that
issue.
We held some truths to be self-evident.
But, you know, hypocrisy runs rampant.
We just took that was not even planned. We took that side the same fucking time. I'm swearing so much this podcast.
Person.
God damn.
Okay, so I'll give a rundown on my life. So this week has literally been filled with so much activism for me. And I did not know how much I could do, if I'm honest. And it's been both heartbreaking and almost enlightening to be able to do so much. Because it's heartbreaking that I have to, like, feel self-accountable to do so much, especially when, like, we shouldn't be fighting this issue. Like,
no.
This shouldn't be something that 2020 Gen Zers should be,
props
like...
to Gen Z. Props to fucking Gen
okay.
Z.
I literally...
Raise a glass for Gen
yes.
Z, but also
our
only...
Our Starbucks cups.
Also only for 21. Parody.
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's been heartbreaking, but it's also been enlightening to see that this generation truly, truly just embodies the motto of, I don't give an actual F. Like, I don't. And
that's honest. Yeah.
Yep. That's how we live. And I saw a tweet that was like, wow, y'all gave the most suicidal generation a reason to die. And I was like, yeah, y'all really did.
You
like,
really did.
Like, that sucks for you, doesn't it? Brother.
It's funny because, like, and I like just the open blame Gen Z has for the generations above us, where we're just so...
Oh, yeah, we, like, even millennials,
we're
they're not
so,
absent
no.
to our, like, scorching,
no.
vivacious
and, like,
rhetoric.
I don't mean
sorry,
to, like, I don't mean to, like, toot our own horn, but, like, the way y'all destroyed the world for us, and now we have to, like, now we have, like, Greta Thunberg, and now we have, like, teens who are... donating money to bailout funds, organizing bailout funds.
Oh,
I'm just like,
sure.
Wow.
Yeah. I've gone to 3 protests this week.
I've only been to one.
I ended up leading one, which was nerve-wracking. And we were surrounded by cops the whole time. By the way, we live in a very conservative state.
Oh.
In a very red district. I would say very pretty red. Pretty. Jesse Johnson is our freaking representative.
Yeah,
we're pretty
yeah.
red.
I think as a city, though, the people who were at the protest are...
They're Republican, but they're more progressive. They're moderates.
Moderates.
As am I. So,
progressive moderates.
You know, they care a little bit more.
People who care about other people. Let's leave it at that.
Right, right. So, that was literally so nerve-wracking. There was, like, a crowd of, like, 60, 65 people. And it was so scary because there was, like, absolutely no communication between SFPD and the protests going on.
Yeah.
So it just looked like it was a big intimidation game, and I was, like, not having it. And I invited officers to kneel, and they were like, our department isn't letting us.
Oh.
And so I told them, I'm like, well, I would hope that individually you'd be convicted, you know, article whatever, amendment one. He looks at me and kind of chuckled and goes... But that's getting into politics, and I go, I didn't know human rights was political.
I didn't know your Bill of Rights connoisseurship was...
Right, right, exactly. And whatever. I don't know. I just found it really interesting how I, like, struggle ordering Subway, but I just said that to a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of
I'm afraid to
the
ask,
dichotomy
I'm
of
afraid
myself.
To ask for, like, an iced drink at Starbucks, but at the same time, I'm like... Because I feel like it'll inconvenience the barista, but at the same time, I'm like... I'm out here being like, let's rally.
Yeah, tweeting at the president.
Tweeting at the president. Yeah, that's the other thing about our generation. We're a lot of talk on Twitter, but also you can't yell at us because we're sensitive.
Yeah, but we will knock your door down.
Oh yeah.
Also, I had the I organized this cleanup, which got reported on the news. That was crazy.
Proud of Catherine.
I literally forgot about that. That's how much like stuff has been happening.
I'm so proud of this little girl on this.
The only reason I bring that up is because racism in those comments.
What?
Racism in the comments.
Oh my god. I didn't see that.
It was like these people basically saying, like, I saw a comment that was like, wow, notice the color of the people that are cleaning it up versus the color of the people that did the mess.
Baby girl, she's Hispanic.
Yeah, and I literally was like, and I told myself I wasn't gonna reply to anybody in the comments because there was like thousands and thousands of comments. No, I got someone to do it by proxy because I was scared.
Good, good. Other thing that I was thinking today, I was like, if anyone ever has a problem with our podcast, we're like two minorities here. I mean... We have the gays, and we have, like...
the brown girl.
The little brown girl, yeah.
Oh, I just snorted. Cute.
Oh, cute. Just curly things.
Oh, and then also, we sent letters to the state attorney of Kentucky and Governor Andy Shehead, I don't know how to say his last name, of, Arkansas.
Wow.
So, yes, it's been a week, and I only say that to encourage y'all, because if me, a 17-year-old with... anxiety can do that, then you can do whatever you want to help the BLM cause or any other, you know, human rights things that are going on. So, you know, do not be discouraged. You can do things. It's your choice if you choose to be passive during this time. So,
yeah.
Do that.
So, yes. Today is our very first episode of Pride Month because we took last week off with everything going on. We felt like it was not our time since we're not... creators of that type of thing, but at the same time, Stonewall was reminder that Stonewall was a riot, and we have to trace back to those things and the steps that we've taken towards LGBTQ equality. This is a topic that's very important to both of us, me especially,
right?
Para mi comunidad. And then, so today I'm gonna be talking about one of my personal heroes. And also, we kind of stopped doing the quote thing, but I want to bring the quote thing back because my favorite quote of all time comes from my person today.
Oh, who is it? You haven't told me about it.
I haven't told Catherine. I won't tell her who, but I'll say the quote is this.
Maybe I'll know it.
Hope will never be silent.
I do not know it.
She does not know it. But think about the quote.
Where's the buzz thing?
Hope
from like...
will never be silent. Like you buzz in, yeah.
Yeah.
It was... I'll say he was, like, a trailblazer. He was, like, one of the first openly gay in his career ship. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Is he... Wait, no.
From California?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Well, he's personally one of my heroes. It's Mr. I'll be talking about Mr. Harvey Milk.
I don't know who that is.
She does not know who Harvey Milk is.
Ride,
she's in for education. Okay, Catherine has been waiting for this episode since we started the podcast in
literally,
March.
Literally, I love this man so much. He inspired my favorite movie, and...
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I love that movie too.
Yes,
yes, so today I'm going to be talking about Mr. Alan Turing, which literally an inspiration. Not enough people know about him. He is a UK scientist, and because the United States educational system is centered around the United States, nobody ever knows who he is. Yeah. And that needs to change because this man is an inspiration, amazing, genius. Mm-hmm. Any adjective regarding intellect that you would want to put in place, he fits that criterion.
Also, love him. So today's episode is if you like want to like have some good news about civil rights advancements, still a long way to go, obviously.
There's a little bit of sad in my story.
Oh yeah, there's definitely sad in your story. I know how your story ends, and there's sad in my story too.
Okay, well,
okay, but we have to go back. Okay, anyways, sit back, relax, and enjoy his story time.
Yeah.
Okay, I accidentally just started this recording, but honestly, we're gonna roll with it. So hopefully you have your snacks. Yeah. And today we're gonna talk about my personal hero, Harvey Milk.
Yay.
Mr. Harvey was born on May 22nd, 1930, in Woodmere, New York. His father was Lithuanian, and he served in the U.S. Navy. And it says here, spirited and independent mother, Minerva, was also a Lithuanian.
I love that name.
And was a yeomanette, I don't know how to say that, during World War I. He came from a small middle-class Jewish family, so we love double minority.
Yeah.
It founded a Jewish synagogue, as well as New York Litvaks, community, for their civic engagement. So it also says, this is from the milkfoundation.org, he knew he was gay by the time he attended Bayshore High School, where he was a popular student with wide-ranging interests from opera to playing football.
Wow.
What a well-rounded man.
Wow. He has range.
He's got the range. Okay. Yep. It also says he went to college at New York State College for teachers, and now it's the State University of New York. So he moved to Albany, where he studied math and history.
Again,
history
range.
Major, literally my hero. I want to be this man. Math and history. I'm a history major. He also wrote a newspaper. He began questioning the issues of diversity with the reflection on the lessons that they just learned in the recently ended World War II.
Wow.
So he was like, wow, injustices, World War II, the world around us, crazy.
Crazy.
The funny thing about history too is a lot of times you don't know you're living it until it's like, you know, over. He wasn't one of those people. He was like, oh shoot, let's talk about diversity. So
that's awesome.
Good for him. He graduated in 1951 and then enlisted in the Navy. Again, the range of this man. He moved to Newport, Rhode Island, and then he was based in San Diego. And his job was a diving instructor. Again, what do we say about that, Catherine?
Range.
The range, dude, of this man.
Imagine being able to swim. I cannot remember.
Yeah. So he's there for like 4 years. And then in 1955, he resigned at the rank of lieutenant junior after being questioned about his sexual orientation. This is, can you imagine? Like, this is like, what, 30 or 40 years before Don't Ask, Don't Tell? 40-ish?
Yeah.
crazy stuff. And have you seen that video of Bernie Sanders where he like goes after that one congressman for like calling homos in the military? Have you seen that video?
I have not.
It's like from the 90s. Bernie Sanders goes off on this one Republican, because he was at the time still independent. He goes off on this one Republican mm-hmm. senator who said something about having homos in the military, and Bernie's like, those homos are like saving your ass, dummy.
Yes.
And honestly, like, that, like, his campaign brought that video up and like made him an icon. Good. More than an icon.
An icon.
Quick drink break. Take a moment to yourself.
Yep. Coffee.
Wow. Okay. Keeping this rolling. So, following his time in the Navy, he entered the civilian working world in New York. He was a public school teacher, a stock analyst, and a production associate for Broadway musicals.
Bro.
Simultaneously. Like, again, range. Again, everything I want to be in life. During 1960s and early 70s, he became actively involved in politics and advocacy, and he demonstrated against the Vietnam War.
Oh my gosh, he was just so ahead of his
time. And you
time.
Don't know who this is?
I don't.
Oh my
I'm,
god.
Like, ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is where, like, his story, like, takes off, though. Like, okay, here now, okay. He's just been, like, pippining, trying to find his corner of the sky, whatever. okay, and then in late 1972, he moves to San Francisco. He opens a camera store on Castro Street in the heart of the city's growing gay community.
Wow.
Yeah, and it becomes, like, a hub in the city for, like, his, like, community members, mm-hmm. some of which are part of the LGBTQ community. And he has this sense of humor and theatricality that people really liked about him. And again, it's everything I try to emulate. And then a little after his year here at Redmond City, he was like, I'm going to run for the San Francisco Board of Supervisors.
Oh, how'd that go?
And he lost that race.
Well, you know, but Bernie Sanders lost the first, like, 18 races he ran, so.
Yeah. So he loses that race, but emerges from the campaign, and people are like, oh, okay, I know who that is now. Name recognition takes you so far. Have you heard about, like, that one? There was, like, I don't remember when this was, but we talked about it in AP Gov. There was, like, a senator or some elected official who literally died but was still on the ballot, and he still won. Like, his death broke the news. People just, like, voted for him because he was, like, Republican in a Republican district or something. Crazy. So, some of the merchants tried to prevent two gay men from opening a store. And Milk is not having anything to do with this.
Good.
He founds the Castro Village Association, the first in the nation of organizing predominantly LGBT businesses. And he's like, okay, I'm president. Milk for president. Okay. So he organizes a thing called the Castro Street Fair in 1974 to attract more customers to area businesses. Its successes made the Castro Village Association an effective power base for gay merchants and a blueprint for other LGBT communities in the U.S. Harvey Milk really said gay rights.
He really
did. So much of this says gay rights. Okay. And then, okay.
And this is so, again, ahead of his time.
No idea. Yeah. And so then in 1975, oop. I just got a text.
Oop is right, sir.
We're going to mark that as red. In 1975, he runs again, and he narrowly lost. This time, he's getting closer.
Again, so, this is a Bernie Sanders approach to
this is
life.
Like the rise to, yeah. He was established as a leading political spokesman, and
He has this friend.
His name's Mayor George Moscone. Moscone. Oop. He appointed Milk to the city's Board of Permit Appeals, making Milk the city's first, you guessed it, openly gay commissioner in the United States.
Wow.
So he's the first openly gay commissioner. Going forward. So here, we're gonna continue to talk about Harvey Milk. He has just been appointed as the first city commissioner to be openly gay in the United States of America.
Really great. Would also have the audience know that we just took like a 2-hour break.
We just took a 2-hour dinner break. and scene.
Yeah.
That's where we go.
Moving on.
Yeah. Whatever. So, he then files candidacy papers for the state assembly, but guess what? He loses his race. Unfortunately, he would have a greater chance on political success with his people, the LGBT community that he created in the Castro. So then he works with his campaign manager, Anne Cronenberg, and Mayor Moscone. His G, Mayor Moscone, the man who really said gay rights. And he wants to pass this amendment that would replace at-large elections for the Board of Supervisors with district elections, because then if he has district elections, he's going to be able to win over his people. And in 1977, he wins the bid and he's inaugurated as a San Francisco City County Supervisor. So it's important because this is like the first big election that he like wins. This is like the first like also, gay man, and keep in mind the year 1978 at this point, he makes national, like global headlines, because there's, like, this gay man in 1978 in this position of power. Like, people supported him.
This is so wild, because it wasn't that long ago, but, like,
everyone likes to think it is.
Yeah, rights-wise, it was
rights-wise, they're like, you think that we've improved.
And then if you compare that to, like, the Pete Buttigieg presidential campaign run, like, you see the difference between, like, the public then and the public now, and it's kind of, it kind of warms your heart a little bit, because, like,
a little bit. I feel like the people who changed. I feel, right. You know, that's a weird thing to think about, too, is, like, thinking about who changed, you know?
Exactly.
Because the people
that didn't change. Did.
The people who hold traditional values.
Right.
And there's nothing that can change that, really. So, now, but here's the other thing, too. Now he has his commitment with his position. He has, like, a broader constituency, not just, like, the people he knows in the Castro.
Mm-hmm.
So, his charisma, though, and his energetic approach to this is, like, gives him some popularity.
Right.
He has this, like, ambitious, he's, like, bright-eyed, he's like, hell yeah, I'm gonna do all these things. And he, like, his agenda, low-key, is, like, a reform agenda that really says gay rights. He sponsored an anti-discrimination bill.
Hmm.
And he wanted to establish daycare centers for working mothers.
Wow.
The conversion of military facilities in the city to low-cost housing. He proposes this.
Wow.
He really said.
This was like.
Because keep in mind, and also like look back, he was like a vocal opponent of the Vietnam War.
Ooh.
Ooh. Harvey Milk, my hero. Okay. He wanted to reform the tax code to attract industry to deserted warehouses and factories in San Francisco. And, like, other issues, too. Like, this is just, like, his thing. He's, like...
I'm sorry. Like, I just cannot imagine, like...
Mm-hmm.
This was when, like, the rise of Dick Cheney, who's, like, notorious for the military-industrial complex. Like, him just shaking at, like...
Just shaking at this, like...
Mr. Milk.
Fiery gay man, yeah. In addition, he spoke out on several issues of interest to LGBT people, women, racial and ethnic minorities, and marginalized communities. Okay. Because he had this position. And people liked him because he was, like, ambitious. And when I say people liked him, I mean, like, people liked that about him. It wasn't even, like, a him thing, you know? So, one of these is called Preposition 6. It's a ballot initiative in California. And it would have mandated the firing of gay teachers in the state's public schools.
That's disgusting.
Yup. State Senator John Briggs, seeking to marshal anti-gay sentiment and agenda of discrimination for political gain, he spearheads this with strong, effective opposition from Milk. It's defeated at a time when, like, other attacks on gay people were, like, a thing in the U.S., you know, like, domestic partnerships, things like that. Because other thing to keep in mind, Stonewall was exactly a decade earlier.
Wow.
This is 10 years after Stonewall. So... There are now, wait for it, gay pride marches in San Francisco and Los Angeles as Milk campaigns against this Briggs initiative. You know, the one that's just like, gay teachers shouldn't exist. And the other thing about this man that we have to appreciate, the man can give a speech. Okay?
Ooh, we'd so, love
like,
a good order.
He's going on this, like, I always called it a world tour, but it's just a tour of California. And he there's one quote, and it says, "Gay people, we will not win our rights by staying quietly in our closets. We are coming out to fight the lies, the myths, the distortions. We are coming out to tell the truths about gays, for I am tired of the conspiracy of silence, so I'm going to talk about it. And I want you to talk about it. You must come out."
What? And you play on words.
This one. Man! Oh my god. I cannot, like, oh my. Harvey Milk. Okay. So, his, like, just sheer, like, way of carrying himself. He's like, a successful politician and leader because he's, like, someone who can get people really riled up about his cause in, like, that's a awesome. Constructive way where he's talking about, like, individual, like, responsibilities, not, like, individual responsibilities for the people he's trying to, like, reach out to.
And that's
he's
such
not
an
trying...
important conversation then and now.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to unite people behind a cause instead of, like...
Talk about historical continuity.
Yeah. Okay. He also, like, builds coalitions between diverse groups, like minorities, Asians, women, Hispanics, disabled, and disabled people, because that's also at this time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really great drunk history episode. I forget. But it's about the Accessibility Act and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's around the same time. And on, here's a turn. So, you know, Mayor George Moscone, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We know the lovely Harvey Milk, author, not even author, but, like, the person who said the quotes, "You must come out," and, like, "Hope will never be silent." There's another city supervisor.
Oh, dear.
By the name of Dan White.
Oh my gosh.
And he no longer worked for the city, but in 1970, in November 27th of 1978, he is disgruntled, and something goes down. But before we talk about that, we're going to talk about the hatred directed at gay people in Harvey Milk, because keep in mind, yeah, we can rally behind him, but there were also obviously people that were upset that there was, you know, like, a gay man talking right. and advocating for equal rights.
Crazy.
So he received daily death threats, and he literally was, like, recorded several times saying, yeah, I might get assassinated.
Oh, wow. Imagine the bravery mm-hmm. of this man, though.
Like, they found, like, his will and, like, different versions of his will. He says, this is a quote, to be read in the event of my assassination. He has that in multiple versions of his will.
Oh, my goodness.
And then one,
that's not a good way to live.
He has another famous quote, because Harvey Milk can just, like...
Sorry, my phone fell.
He can just, like, say these things. He says, also... If a bullet should enter my brain, let that bullet destroy every closet door. Think wow. about that. Think about that.
The pathos.
This man. He also has a nephew, Stuart Milk, and he's a teenager on November 27th, 1978. Hmm. And he came out, along with countless others across the nation,
go ahead.
This day.
Go all of them.
And shortly after November 27, there are people marching in Washington, D.C. Now, let's talk about what happened on November 27th, because it's sad, and a reminder that this happened, like, 40 years ago. Oh, not all that long. In the context of history, literally yesterday.
I love that phrase, by the way, in the context of history, literally yesterday.
Yeah. So on November 27th, 1978, Dan White, the disgruntled former city supervisor, sneaks into City Hall through a basement window, breaks into City Hall, because he doesn't want to go through metal detectors.
Oh no!
He goes into Mayor Moscone's office and kills him. Then he walks down a hall and finds Harvey Milk. And Harvey Milk is assassinated.
No.
That night, thousands spontaneously gather on Castro Street and march to City Hall in a candlelight vigil. And it has been recognized as one of the most eloquent responses to violence that a community has ever expressed. That's what the milkfoundation.org says.
Wow.
So, Dan White, his assassin, is acquitted of murder charges and given a mild sentence for manslaughter. Also verbatim from the Milk Foundation, because what the fuck?
Mild sentence.
Partly because of a result of what had been known as the quote-unquote Twinkie defense.
Ugh, no!
His attorney claimed that White had eaten too much junk food on the day of the killings and thus could not be held accountable for his crimes. He was sentenced to less than 8 years in prison on May 21st, 1979. He is sentenced to less than 8 years in prison on May 21st, 1979. The day before what would have been Milk's 49th birthday.
That's a slap in the face.
Igniting what became known as the White Night Riots. Riots break out at this bullshit sentence and enraged citizens storm City Hall. The city suffered property damage and police officers retaliated by raiding the Castro, the gay neighborhood that Harvey Milk built. Oh. Vandalizing gay businesses and beating people on the street.
I hate it here.
Let me read that one more time, because timeliness. The city suffered property damage, and police officers retaliated by raiding the Castro, vandalizing gay businesses, and beating people on the street.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Moment of silence.
So, yeah. There's a Harvey Milk High School in New York City, and in the Castro neighborhood. They've been named, like, he's had movies named after him. There's an opera named after him. He really said gay rights.
He really did.
Yeah. It received 8 Academy Award nominations for the movie.
Wow.
In 1 and 2 categories. Sean Penn for his portrayal as Harvey Milk, and Dustin Lance Black wins an Oscar for the screenplay. So yeah. Do you understand why this man is my hero now?
I totally do. Him as, like, a politician, and honestly just as a character, living in the 70s, going into the 80s, when, like, you had, you know, stuff like the AIDS epidemic, which, you know, just gave people, like, justification for even more discrimination and prejudice than they already had. And, like, knowing... I don't like how we don't learn about this in school yet. I feel like in 10 years, 15 years...
I hope. I do. The thing that really sticks with me about this is just, A, the range. Let's say it one more time. The range of this man. His ability to speak out comfortably, because that was not an easy thing to do.
The confidence.
Homophobia still exists. The fact that he literally prepared for death threats, I always find it fascinating that, like, historical figures who can, like, be okay with death, you know?
Yeah. They just kind of accept it as a part of their story and what they're doing, you know?
Yeah. So with that, I'm going to leave us one more time with the Harvey Milk quote.
People of California, even though they're basically conservative, I think have gotten up and said the movement from the right has just gone too far, that we've got to get back to the basic things and solve the basic problems of the nation, and not start to try to pick on each other and fight on each other. And let's work together. And that's an incredible statement. I think the gay people themselves now have to join in and make this state powerful.
Okay, that quote.
So what you just heard was a quote from Mr. Milk. I just like saying Mr. Milk.
Mr. Milk.
Great. And he's talking about California being conservative.
It was the defeat of the Briggs Initiative.
Right. And he's talking about...
people needing to come together. Because the only thing that can really save people is people.
Yeah. And I feel like that's just so powerful today. Because we all have things wanting to divide us. We all have things wanting to pull us apart. And... we need to stick to that message of unity and togetherness, because God knows that 2020 is not been great for us. But maybe it's an opportunity for us to collectively humble ourselves.
All right, now it's Catherine's turn to pop off.
Yes.
Okay. Ready?
Set.
Go. Welcome back.
So I'm beyond excited right now.
This is going to be Catherine's favorite episode.
Probably, because this is my favorite historical figure of all time.
Of all time?
All time. He is my favorite. Oh, wow. He has inspired so many things. And
the iPhone.
He really has. He's amazing, okay? And so many people don't know about him, and it breaks my heart. So today, I'm going to be unwrapping the life story of, again, my favorite historical figure. His life story is also my favorite movie.
Yes.
And I have been obsessed with his story since the first time I watched it, which was when I was literally 13. So I'm very excited. We're going to be learning about Mr. Alan Turing. And
I feel like you should have like an air horn there, like Alan Turing. Boo, 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 boo.
Yeah, we really should. He deserves it. So again, strap in, because today this man's brilliant intelligence is just going to shock you, because it just continues to shock me. So, his story begins when he was born, June 23rd, 1912, and his parents were Julius and Ethel Turing. By the way, I just love the name Ethel.
Julius and Ethel? That's amazing.
Yes. I mean, they would make a baby genius. Mm-hmm. He was born in Vale, London, England, and his family was actually part of the English gentry, and although they weren't per se rich, they were definitely upper middle class. So, just to give you some exposition on his background. Now, from a young age, Alan's intelligence shone through in all aspects of his life.
Hey, again, the range.
No, we'll get to the range.
Can we talk about the range? Just the range of gay people. Gay people can do anything.
Yeah, Blake proves that again and again. You prove that.
This episode really said gay rights.
Yeah. By accounts of his primary school teachers, they noted him being a genius from, like, age 9. Like, that's how apparent his intellect was.
Dang.
Can you, like, I don't know what I was doing at age 9, but it was nothing that would have pointed me to being a genius, mostly because I'm not. But Mr. Alan Turing, was.
What the episode just started.
Oh.
Oh, that was weird.
Interesting.
Well, you just heard that again.
Technical difficulties. Okay, we're still going.
Anyways,
we're
he's a genius.
Grant, yeah, he is a genius. So, where was I? Okay, Alan became very interested in the idea of chess when he was around 9, and just complex solving problems in general, which would be very telling and very foreshadow-esque of his future accomplishments, because that's really what he, like, delves into.
Yeah.
So, Alan ended up moving to the Sherborne School, which I believe was a boarding school, because most people overseas go to boarding school.
And they were upper middle. I was literally about to ask that, too, when you said they were upper middle class. I was like, okay, this boy went to a boarding school. Like some.
Yeah, he went to a boarding school.
He went to Hogwarts.
Yeah, he was the Harry Potter of our story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this school had an emphasis on humanities and classics, and Turing's interests lied more in mathematics and science. But not to worry, the school did end up cultivating his love for some things.
Oh, Catherine.
This is the most heartbreaking. It's not the most heartbreaking yet, but it's one of those things that just tugs at my heart. So towards the end of his time at Sherborne, I don't know how to say it, Turing formed a close relationship with another student named Christopher Morcombe.
Oh, no.
Who shared his intellectual curiosity and inspired Alan's future endeavors. I just thought that was beautiful. He has been described as Turing's first love, which is also heartbreaking. However, their relationship was cut short by Morcombe's death in 1930 from tuberculosis. Which is devastating, because it was Alan's first love.
I'm crying in the club.
Turing coped with his grief by devoting his energy to scientific study, and in an attempt to fulfill his friend's potential, he kind of really delved into it, since they both were so interested in, like, mathematics mm-hmm. and science and all those, you know, really nerdy intellectual things. He, like, it was almost like him, like, compensating for Christopher not being able to achieve it. He achieved for both of them, and that he did. Just 1 year later, he attended King's College, better known as the University of Cambridge, in which he studied from...
Isn't that where Newton went to college? We did an episode on that.
He might have, actually.
Yeah, he went to Cambridge.
Yeah, yeah.
There's also theories that Cambridge, or not Cambridge, frick.
Cambridge.
Isaac Newton is a homosexual. That was another thing I think we talked about in that episode.
Wow. Yeah.
Homosexuals are smart. Kings.
In which he studied... So he studied from 1931 to 1934. He got his little bachelor's degree. He studied the foundations of quantum mechanics.
As one does.
Yeah. So interesting. Not to me, but interesting.
Yeah.
He really found his niche and got into a lot of things that he couldn't explore in earlier schooling. As I said, his previous schools were really focused on, like, humanities. That, like, just wasn't what he vibed with. So, he got a lot of new opportunities. In fact, I found this quote, which I loved, and I know you're gonna love.
Okay.
I just know you're gonna love.
Okay.
So, this is a quote from one of the sites while I was doing research. It says, quote, "At the same time he was studying, homosexuality became a definitive part of his identity. The special ambiance that... Ambiance.
There we go.
Of King's College gave him a first real home. His association with the so-called anti-war movement of 1933 did not develop into Marxism, nor into pacifism of his friend and occasional lover, James Atkiss.
Oh.
Then a fellow undergraduate mathematician, later he became a musician. He was closer in thought to liberal left economics of J.M. Keynes. I don't know. He's the father of Keynes.
This episode
Keynesian.
Is just Keynesian economics?
Keynesian.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's the founder of Keynesian economics. I don't know how to say his name. His relaxations were found not in the literary circles generally associated with King's College, homosexual milieu, but in rowing, running, and later in sailing of a small boat. So, you know, he had range.
You know what?
Range. He did, because he was anti-war, but he wasn't Marxist yet, which, you know, we love a... Yeah, okay, moving on. Can't go into that without getting
That's
roasted.
Another episode.
Yeah, but he didn't go into pacifism either. He said, no, I'm going to be liberal-ish. which is liberal left, which is just so fun.
Yeah.
Just so fun. And I wrote my script here. A lot to unpack, but basically, Alan and Blake would have been best friends. Because when I describe Alan, I'm just describing Blake. Liberal left. Keynesian economics.
Keynesian?
I don't know how to say it.
FDR yeah. loves himself some Keynesian economics.
But he did.
Yeah.
I'm going to literally edit myself out saying Keynesian.
Honestly, no, that's kind of, like, the brand of this episode is just us mispronouncing things that yeah. we maybe should know how to say,
but we don't.
It's whatever.
So, yeah. I just think you guys would have gotten along so well.
I want to meet, like, and I think if, like, a room of, like, powerful gay men, Alan Turing.
He would have been there.
Harvey Milk.
Can you imagine?
Just great. Potentially Sir Isaac Newton, not to speculate, but, like.
So, yeah, in 1936, Turing further went on to study mathematics at Princeton University, where he completed his PhD in 2 years.
Oh.
As
one does.
Yep, this is where he developed his universal computing machine, which...
Enigma?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
Not yet.
I was like, whoa, that was early.
No. This solved a lot of complicated equations. Not Enigma yet, don't worry. This literally foreshadowed the digital computer, which is huge, because this man is the father of the phone that you were listening to this on.
Yeah, if you ever wonder where the Apple logo comes from, do you know that?
No, I don't.
Holy, okay, no, think about it. Apple logo. Think about it. Apple.
Apple?
Apple. There's a bite taken out of the Apple logo.
I'm not getting the nuance.
Do you know... We might have to edit this out. Okay, hold up. I'm going to explain this to Catherine really quick, and then we'll be right back.
So, Blake just...
Okay, we're back. We're back. Okay, we'll get to it in a second.
Yeah, we will. So, where are we now in the timeline? We're on to 1939, when Alan was asked to join the Government Codes and Cipher School, which this school was eventually moved to Bletchley Park. I don't know how to say that.
Bletchley, yeah. They in the movie, they're like, the Bletchley Park.
Yep.
I don't know why I said that in cursive. But.
In cursive. So this is where it was moved when World War II was declared on September 3rd. So. Mm-hmm.
Of 1939? Or September 3rd, 1939?
That's what the website said.
When did he invade?
We're moving on now.
Okay.
This caused Alan to turn his attentions to complex German naval signals, where he ended up developing a complex code-breaking technique he named the Turingery. I don't know how to say that either. Turingery? Turingery.
Yeah, I don't know.
Close enough. He would make 4 other monumental developments, including the developments in cryptoanalysis, specifying the bomb, and the development in electromechanical device.
As that one does.
Help decipher the German Enigma.
Ooh.
Which was huge.
Watch the
y'all.
Imitation Game. Watch
I know this sounds game. like, oh my god, that sounds like a drag. But this man just did that in 1939, 1940, whatever. Like, That's huge.
He's literally such an important, like, global figure. Yeah. Like, if you think about, like, think about the people that you talked about in, like, your world history class, where you're just like, we talked about, like, Marco Polo.
Or Ibn Battuta.
Ibn Battuta is important. That, like, man traveled
miles. All of y'all are so important, but, like, Alan. But, like, Alan.
And the reason they don't talk about Alan is because, like, we didn't talk about Alan for such a long time.
Exactly. And now we're talking about him. Like, so... But, like, not even that. Turing first addressed the issue of artificial intelligence, which, like, I've done research on artificial intelligence for a little bit in my biomed class and, mm-hmm. like, an OCR yeah. topic that we did. So, artificial intelligence is, like, the thing and is going to continue to be, like, one of the biggest topics of the conversation in the coming years. And
he just, like...
He invented it. Alan Turing invented artificial intelligence. And this was in 1950 is when he first had the Computing Machinery and Intelligence book published. Can you imagine that? I can't. And in it, he devised what he called the imitation game, which is now the Turing test, which is the method in which they test whether a machine is showing behavior that can truly be called intelligent. Mm-hmm. So this test has significantly influenced research on AI now, and he made this in 1950. So just imagine how ahead of his time he really was. Like, he was decades above, like, anything. So now comes the sad part.
Yep.
This is the saddest part of the story. This part is the part that angers me to no avail.
Can't wait for this discussion.
In 1952, Allen reported a burglary to the police, and the man who perpetrated said robbery happened to have been a sexual partner of Allen. And at the time, the UK had anti-homosexuality laws in the 50s, and so he was charged with gross indecency. He was given the choice of either prison or chemical castration. So he chose chemical castration, and this eventually caused him to be left impotent. Thanks to this, he also lost his security clearance and was barred from continuing his work in cryptography.
I'm so mad.
This is disgusting! I literally wrote, pause, take a breath because of the horror, scream very loudly because what in the actual heck?
She said heck, everyone. Honestly, I think it warrants, what you wanted to say.
I know, but, I wrote it too. I wrote it.
Yeah, if you've seen The Imitation Game, that's kind of a spoiler, but at the same time, we're a history podcast, everything is a spoiler. And, but, like, that, just seeing the way, Benedict Cumberbatch goes through that, and I think in the movie, too, you see his relationship with Christopher at boarding school.
Yeah, you do.
Heartbreaking.
Right. It's just, we lost this mind to intolerance and stupidity and pure lunacy.
And
I just
did,
hate
and
it!
This, and this happened in 1952?
Yes, it
like
did.
Like, 1952? And
they had anti-homosexuality laws.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how... And, like... And less like, than, this happened because he reported a robbery.
Uh-huh.
Like, but... Ugh.
And, like... Less than 40... And, like, 40 years-ish later, Harvey Milk is murdered.
I hate it here.
Because of what he did.
So...
Keep this in mind, everyone. The distance between Alan Turing's death and Harvey Milk's death is the difference between Harvey Milk's death and now.
Ooh. Ooh. History was yesterday.
History was yesterday.
So on June 7th, 1954, Turing was found dead with cyanide poisoning. His death was found to be a suicide.
Now, here's where we're going to talk about a theory, because I had heard this, and Catherine did not.
Yeah, that's
and
why
Catherine,
we paused.
Catherine did her extensive research. She does, as she does. You guys should see her, like, notes.
I'm always so prepared.
They're
Blake is like,
artful.
I have the Wikipedia.
I'm like, I have the Wikipedia and the organization page open. And
that's just how we work.
And then, but, so, I had heard from one of my teachers in middle school, because we talked about Alan Turing. He, my Yuli teacher in middle school told me that Alan Turing laced an apple with cyanide and took a bite out of the laced apple. And that's how he died. CNN, this article we found in the break, CNN, that is how he died. He did take the bite out of the apple. We do know that. So...
Sorry.
We know that happened. He took a single bite, obviously, if you take a bite and it's just straight cyanide.
Right.
The Apple logo on like an iPhone or a MacBook is an apple with a single bite out of it. Alan Turing invented the software and like the imitation game, the intelligence things that would make it possible to have an iPhone or a MacBook. So there's a charming theory that the Apple logo comes from Alan Turing's suicide. And it's a way to pay him respect. There's a person named Rob Janoff. He's the guy who draws the Apple logo. There are other theories on where the Apple itself comes from. There's a theory about Sir Isaac. There's a theory about Adam and Eve in the Bible. He dismisses those. He says... They're absolutely not true. What he says about the Alan Turing connection is that while he says he is charmed by the links of Alan Turing, he says he's unaware of them at the time. He says, it's a wonderful urban legend. So, unlike the Sir Isaac Newton and the Adam and Eve ones, he denies those. But then, when it comes to Alan Turing, he goes, that's a charming urban legend. So, mm-hmm. I'd like to think it's a way to pay... it genuinely is a way to pay respect. It's a visually appealing logo. It's clean.
Mm-hmm.
It's aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how they got the logo. However, I feel like with the time that it developed, they were maybe a little hesitant to declare that it was because of
I choose to believe it. I like that story.
I like to believe that too.
I think it's a good urban legend.
It fits so well.
It does. It gives him more credit.
And he didn't deny it. Like, that's me reading into it. I'm like, he didn't deny it. He said he didn't deny it. He just said it's an urban legend.
Charming. It's a, the word charming. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Sorry, that's the theory. So much. But I like the theory.
Can we also just talk about, like, this man invented, like, the basis of what is, like, modern technology, and we don't really talk about him in school.
Right, and I even said, like, to talk about his legacy and just acknowledge how monumental and just mm-hmm. meaningful it was, and it just makes me so angry that mm-hmm. not enough people know about him. He's so important, and he should be up there with, you know, everybody we do know. Like, why do I know George Washington?
I was thinking, there are so many random history figures. Like, there's a guy who wrote
Paul
a book.
Revere.
Paul Revere. Like, okay, Paul Revere, for goodness sake. Fuck Paul Revere. I'm moving to Boston, I can say that. and another thing, I was literally the first thing that comes to mind. There's this one author of a book called The Impending Crisis of the South or something. And the author's name was, like, Our Helper or something. And I know who that is. I know the story behind that. Like, he was someone who was saying, like, the South is about to, like, implode economically. Right. Not entirely wrong. But, like, I know that. I know that that happened. I know that that person said something that actually kind of ended up becoming true.
Yeah.
But, like, when it came to, like, world history, we didn't really talk about Alan Turing or the fact that he, like, invented...
I mean, I didn't get there because COVID, but...
Yeah.
Word.
Yeah.
So, to finish it off...
To finish, yes.
His code-breaking operations at Bletchley Park are credited for shortening World War II by as much as 2 years and ensured the Allied victory. This man's brain saved thousands of lives and basically assured that the United States would be placed as a world power like it is today. It assured that the UN would be established. It assured literally world as we know it today, yep. And he has gotten no credit.
They just discarded him. Yeah. They discarded everything because of allegations.
Yep.
Because of allegations that are, like, outdated today and kind of just, like...
Bad.
And here's the other thing, too. Like, you can say what you will about allegations, but, like, that's the argument. That's the argument for civil rights. It's like, is this something that, like, is human? Is it human in nature? And can we just discard everything about a human because of who they are?
Exactly. So, in 2015...
Happy Pride Month, everyone.
Yep. In 2015, a National Center for Research in Data Science and Artificial Intelligence was created in his name.
Finally.
So, again, such an amazingly important figure in history that was devastated by the intolerance of a time, and it sucks, and we need to talk about him and his life and make for damn sure that stuff like this no longer happens. And I did swear because it warranted it.
Yes. This is the first episode of Pride Month. We hope you enjoyed it.
You'll see another three you will with literally amazing see. Mm-hmm. historical figures.
This episode was dedicated to the homosexuals.
The girls and the gays, that's it.
The girls and the gays. Yeah. Tune in next time where we're going to talk about... We're going to have Pride-themed episodes all month.
Yeah.
Get excited. Hopefully stories that you should know, people you should know, things you should know.
But if you don't...
Because your curriculum is homophobic, that's fine.
And we'll draw more allusions to stuff.
I love drawing allusions. Sir Isaac Newton popped up a lot in this episode. Good for him. Good for him.
Sir Isaac Newton.
Yeah. Go back and listen to that episode if you haven't. Other than that, we're going to, like, peace out, sign off now.
Yep.
Catherine
needs to write her nationals.
Yeah. Case. Everyone stay safe out there in the world. Fight the good fight.
Fight the good
love
fight.
Love one another. Say your prayers if you want.
Yes.
We're going to say peace out, Thomas Sanders quote, guys, gals, and non-binary pals. And on that note, have a great night.